Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Today is the day. It is Friday. It is the 10th of May, and it's Mother's Day weekend. If you're like me and you bought a card and you haven't sent it yet, I really don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. There you go. There's my personal dilemma for this morning. Mom, if you're listening, I know this doesn't surprise you because I do this regularly. In fact, the Mother's Day card I have is actually the one I bought last year. So I don't know. You guys now know I need some personal assistance on this particular front. I buy lots of cards. I don't send them. If I should have sent you a card for something, I probably bought a card. I was thoughtful about that part, and then I didn't actually get the card sent. So there you go. Okay. On the Chick-fil-A front, I'll just say this: eat more chicken. And on the conversation about these two shooters in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. You know, let's just remember the name we're going to remember. The name we are going to remember in this story is Kendrick Castile. I've said this before. I will say it again. The name I am committed to remember and repeat is Kendrick Castile. He is the young man who rushed at the shooters in order to save the lives of his classmates and his friends. And greater love has no one than this, than they would lay down their life for their friend. 18 years old, just days away from graduation in robotics, bright future ahead of him. A life given in sacrifice for the lives of his friends. So that's the name I'm going to choose to remember. That's the life well lived I'm going to choose to celebrate. That's the testimony from this event that I'm going to give platform to here on the air. Another death worth noting. I mean, every death is worth noting, but sometimes the impact of one human life is significant in a way that's worth noting and lifting up. And so Jean Vanier has died. That may be a name you have never heard and not known. Jean Vanier created a wildly inefficient model of compassion, and I think it's instructive for us today. So more than 50 years ago, he was visiting in a psychiatric hospital just outside of Paris, and he was shocked by the despair and the loneliness that he found among those who were living there. And living would be a euphemistic description of what he felt like was happening to these people. So he not only made the cause of the intellectually disabled his cause, he actually bought a house and he lived in it with two adults who had severe intellectual disabilities. Why? Well, because in his words, they needed a friend. So this one man's highly personalized model of compassion has inspired others. And today there are some 10,000 people living together in more than 150 Le Arc group homes around the world. So as you can imagine, this is transforming not only for the lives of those with intellectual disabilities who are ordinarily left isolated or institutionalized, it also transforms the lives of those who are called assistants, those without intellectual disabilities who commit at least a year to living in one of these Le Arc homes. So although this movement is not expressly Christian, it's both informed by Vanier's Christian faith, and it certainly expresses the pro-life Christian ethic that every life is precious for all of life. So John Vanier's life ended here on May the 7th, but I feel very confident and comfortable echoing here what the Lord has said and what I anticipate John has now heard. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Well done. I think it provokes the question, when does life end? Whenever we're having a conversation about life and the end of life, we sort of naturally turn to the other question, which is, when does life begin? And so as you consider when life ends and when life begins, I want you to consider the beat of your own heart. Listen for a moment to your own heartbeat as we turn our conversation to that question around the country. That's up next here with Matt Hawkins, who's joining me in just a moment on Mornings with Carmen. So I think the question before us today, as we consider what's happening in the lives of people around us and what's happening in our own families, certainly what's happening across the country in a very robust conversation about life and when it ends and when it begins, and does viability matter? Is that even a word we talk about anymore? I thought it would be interesting to have this conversation with Matthew Hawkins. You can follow him at Matt T. Oh. It's not Matt T. Hawk. It's M.T. Hawk. At M.T. Hawk. And I love to talk with Matt. He has spent a lot of time considering these issues. He spent, like a dozen years on Capitol Hill. And so, Matt, thank you so much for joining us again to talk about these concerns.
Happy to be here, Carmen, as always. Happy Friday morning.
Yeah, happy Friday morning. So, and happy Mother's Day to your sweet bride.
Thank you very much.
You know, it's your responsibility to make sure that that baby girl has a righteous Mother's Day gift, right? Like, that's your job, right, as dad. Okay, I'm just making sure. Apparently, that escapes some people. I'm like, no, dude, that's your job. Okay.
Yeah.
So the governor of Georgia has signed what's called a heartbeat bill. Tell us about that, and then I'd love to talk with you about sort of the honesty of the other side.
Yeah. So Georgia becomes, I believe, the sixth state to pass one of these heartbeat bills, and it basically restricts abortion to anything after a heartbeat is detected, and it requires physicians to detect a heartbeat on an unborn baby. And Georgia, Governor Kemp has withstood some pretty fierce national criticism and blowback, even from celebrities, but stood firm and signed the bill. And this is a really big moment for the pro-life movement, particularly a government or a state as significant as Georgia, that they would go through with this. And I've read most of the bill text. It seems pretty solid. A lot of the rumor mills that are already ginned up about how supposedly women who have miscarriages could be prosecuted and this kind of parade of horribles. By my reading of the bill, pretty much nonsense. There's explicit carve-outs for pregnancies that end naturally, particularly miscarriages. We've experienced that too, and so there are no restrictions. There are no penalties for medical providers who assist women who've had miscarriages, and it's very clear that that's not a thing. And then it outlines a number of other options for physicians and medical care folks who participate in medical care and that in some way accidentally terminates the life of an unborn baby. And so I think this bill, they've really thought through. This is not just we're banning. We're banning abortions at the sign of a heartbeat. Like, that's pretty, it's pages and pages of regulations that I think will be really helpful. And it really helps, I think, put our focus in the general culturalist context about what exactly we're talking about when we're talking about unborn babies. I like what George Will called these heartbeat bills are a, quote, wholesome provocation. So this is definitely a provocation, I think, to some extent. We hope they remain law. But I think this is definitely a sign of where our nation is headed, or at least where the next battle is. So this is a really big deal for Georgia to pass this.
So our mutual friend Albert Mohler took what George Will said, yeah. He said, oh, well, I'm going to go beyond. It's a wholesome move. this is a holy provocation. And I think that's,
sure.
I think that's really helpful language, because the language that we are hearing from others is certainly denying that what is within a woman's womb is even human. Tell us what Christine Quinn said on CNN.
Yeah. So Christine Quinn, she's a former speaker of the New York City Council. And she said on CNN this week, quote, when a woman is pregnant, that is not a human being inside of her, unquote.
So what is it? I wish, that's when you don't, I mean, I don't know about you, but I like yell at the television. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we understand as pro-lifers that that is what the other side of this issue believes. But when they spell it out like that, it's a really still stark and kind of shocking way to hear it enunciated without shame and without any irony on someone's face. And, 50 years ago, maybe, 60 years ago, 100 years ago, I think maybe you could plead ignorance about what, when a life becomes a life. But in this day and age, with sonograms and DNA testing and detecting heartbeats this early, it's just preposterous that we would believe that an unborn baby is not a human being. It's not very going to become anything else. My friend Scott Klusendorf, is always really good. He's one of my favorite pro-life apologists, and he always focuses on what is the unborn. And everything that, women's rights advocates say about the autonomy of women is absolutely correct and wouldn't stand away in any of that. The question remains, what happens when there's an additional human being on the scene? And that's what we're talking about with unborn children.
So as you're listening this morning, I want you to consider when life begins and how you make that judgment call. And certainly as Christians, we believe that that life begins at conception. And so I recognize that there are those who certainly wish that the pro-life conversation is in this country were pushing to that point. But I think it's really significant that it is pushing to this point. A human heartbeat is detectable around 6 weeks of pregnancy. And so we're certainly talking about moving this conversation in the direction of really dramatically limiting abortion if this were to become the popularized moment of legal recognition. All right, Matt Hawkins and I have to take a break, but we will be back. While we are away, I want you to listen to your own heartbeat, and I want you to consider what the sound of a baby's heartbeat is like. I want you to consider what a heart sounds like as it stops beating and the silence that follows.
You are a child of mine, born of my own design, and you bear.
Hey, if you're just joining us this morning on Mornings with Carmen, I am talking with Matthew Hawkins. You can follow him at MT Hawk. Matt, there is a bill in the Texas legislature that is interesting, and I think that as a setup for this, Let me remind listeners of the challenges that churches and other religious nonprofits face in relationship to sexual misconduct, particularly of former employees, and how so this bill is really about how those churches and other nonprofit organizations could be protected from being sued for disclosing sexual misconduct of former employees. So talk with us about Texas House Bill HB 4345. And the reason that we're talking about this is because I don't imagine that this is going to stay confined to Texas. And I think it's a good conversation for us to have.
Yeah, and I really hope it doesn't stay confined to Texas. I'm grateful for Texas for taking the lead on this. So in the context of, say, revelations related to the Me Too movement and scandals across American institutions, including from the Catholic Church to Boy Scouts to Southern Baptist churches, everybody's been scratching their head. Well, I say from scratching their head to screaming out that something needs to be done. And in a particularly kind of a decentralized organization like Baptist churches or any Protestant church, really, it's really easy for staff and pastors, ministers to float from one church to another, whether or not they've had allegations of sexual misconduct in the past or not. It's just the nature of our polity is that we're all autonomous institutions. And then employment law is clearly highly regulated. And you typically, the history is that you can't an institution that lets someone go for sexual misconduct often, most of the time, cannot disclose that to future employers. And so what you have is a situation where abusers can kind of float from one church and one pocket of victims to another. And the people who are employing him, you know, they don't know what they're getting. And the people who had a bad experience can't tell anybody about it. And so what Texas HB 4345, not a terribly compelling
name. It's not a very sexy
number.
Name.
It's not a sexy name. What it tries to do is basically carve out for nonprofits, Texas nonprofits, that they are able to disclose sexual misconduct allegations against former employees without being sued. And so that's a really big deal. It's something Southern Baptist leaders have supported earlier this year. It was actually introduced by Scott Sanford, who's a state representative. Let's see. He's also a Southern Baptist minister, and that's something that clearly Southern Baptists have been dealing with. And this is one step that just passed the Texas House, still has to get to the Senate. So this is early in this process. But the idea here basically is to provide churches and other nonprofits with the ability to disclose sexual misconduct of former employees to future employers. And that could be a really big deal.
Okay, so now I would like to say Happy Easter. Because this is still Eastertide, like, right? Until
sure.
these are the days between Easter and Pentecost or Ascension.
Sure.
I guess Ascension. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so we have this time period during which we continue to celebrate Easter. We continue to mm-hmm. acknowledge and recognize the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Jews just completed the celebration of Passover, and
yeah.
Muslims around the world just this past Sunday night began
right.
in what we would say is the observance of a month called Ramadan. And
right.
you have some thoughts and shared some interesting thoughts about how Christians can pray during Ramadan. So
yeah.
I'd like for you to share that.
Sure. So it's a month, like you said, it's a month long celebration. And typically Muslims during Ramadan, they fast during daylight hours. That includes no water. And then they feast in the evening. And so, that kind of, it's a spiritual, exercise for them. And it's something that, I think Christians ought to recognize. And it's an opportunity to be reminded about the Muslim world our neighbors who, practice the Islamic faith. And we ought to pray, redemptively for them. We ought to pray in a way that's loving. My friend, Pastor Garrett Kell, he's a pastor in the D.C. area up in Northern Virginia, and he posted on his blog a list of ways that we could pray specifically for our Muslim neighbors. And we want to pray ultimately for their eternal salvation. We want to pray that their hearts would be turned to Jesus as a savior and not just a prophet. And we want to acknowledge that they're neighbors too. They bear the image of God. We want to, you know, pray. It's a good time for us to focus on what Christ can be doing in the lives of our Muslim neighbors here in the U.S. and abroad. And so I'd commend that article to your listeners. And it's just a good time, like you said, you know, when Jews have their holidays, it's a good time for Christians to think about them and think about ways we could redemptively pray for their salvation. And also our hearts, we could be praying for our hearts to the quote, religious other, about how our attitudes and dispositions, think about, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, and others who don't yet share our faith.
So, Matt, I know you're not thinking about this morning. But I was sent by one of our friends over at CNN. I was sent this article about a dust devil having passed over NASA's lander on Mars and possibly awakening Opportunity, which is our solar-powered rover, possibly
wow.
reawakening Opportunity to newness of life. So apparently there was a wind vortex, also known as a dust devil. It recently passed over NASA's InSight lander, known as Opportunity, and may have blown enough dust off of its solar panels that the thing might bump back to life. So I would like for
great.
You to be prepared to talk about how a dust devil, could actually have brought newness of life to Opportunity.
That's right. Really fascinating. That's right? I love that. They build these rovers with X years of life, and they die. But a lot of times these guys, the robots are, the engineers are so intuitive or ingenious. They last and last and last for, many days and months longer than the battery was anticipated. This is funny.
Oh yeah, this one has lasted decades longer than it was supposed to. So yeah, this thing is already it might be resurrecting to newness of life. And I thought that because a devil made it happen, a dust devil, no less, I would leave you with that this morning to think about.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Matthew Hawkins, thank you so much for joining us. You guys can follow him at MT Hawk. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. We're going to take a minute to brighten up. Clearly, Ted is in the house running the board today with that funky Friday music.
That's right. Jesus music. Let's go.
Thank you so much for being here. Hey, everybody, we just gave Paul a week off, and we hope he's having a great time. And Matt Reynolds and Ted Rossing have been helping me out actually making the show happen. Like, you guys run the show. I just talk. So, Ted, thank you so much for being here today.
We like to say we push your buttons. Yes.
Yes, you do. Yeah, the button pushers. Okay, so let me ask this. How do you feel about running? I do not like to run. I have never liked to run. I know people who love to run. How do you feel about running? Well, Ryan Hall, as a kid, looked out the window of a vehicle that he was riding with. He was riding with his dad, and he saw this. I mean, there's this lake that's in his neighborhood lake. It's 15 miles around that lake, and he felt compelled, I mean, literally compelled, to challenge himself to run around the lake. And the part of this story that I love is that his dad ran with him. So Ryan Hall is going to be here next. You may recognize his name. He's an Olympic athlete. He's the American record holder in the half marathon at under an hour, actually 59:43. So for those of you who are avid runners, you know what that means. For the rest of us, it just means he ran a really long way in less than an hour. So there you go. Ryan Hall will be here. He's going to talk about a God-given purpose, his in running, but yours in whatever the mile is ahead of you. That's up next. You're on Mornings with Carmen. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am joined now by Ryan Hall. You may recognize him as the U.S. record holder for the half marathon. In the 2007 Houston half marathon, he finished at 59:43, the first American to break the one-hour barrier. That's really not why Ryan's talking with us today. He's talking with us to talk about what it looks like to run the mile you're in. It's his new book. And we are privileged to have him with us today. Ryan, thank you for joining us on Mornings with Carmen.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So no question that you are like a super accomplished athlete, two-time Olympian, record holder in the half marathon. But now you're an author, and the book is Run the Mile You're In. What does running the mile I'm in mean?
Yeah, you know, that title is a mantra that I would pull on all throughout my career over and over again. Because what I found, in running, I described my job as a pro runner as being a professional pain manager. So I was just trying to figure out how to push myself harder and harder. And this was a way for me to get through the pain and to do really hard things and to travel a really hard road was for me to pull myself back and just stay present in the moment that I'm in right now. Because I found when I was on the starting line in marathons, that's the most fearful moment for me because I'm thinking about all these hard miles ahead of me. How am I going to feel at mile 23, 24, 25? How am I going to run the pace I want to run? Like, there's all these questions and doubts. But those all go away when you focus on what you're doing right now and you say, I'm just going to do a great job in this moment, in this mile that I'm in right now, and focus on that. And I know God's going to give me the grace necessary to get through this moment. Might not necessarily give me the grace to look at that mile 24 when I'm on mile one. But when I get to mile 24, the grace will be there.
So talk to the person who can't even imagine running mile one. Like get us get us to take, like, I hate running. And so then when you say, you know, hey, as a professional runner, I'm really a professional pain manager. I'm like, hey, that's not getting me, you know, I've got my tennis shoes on now, but that's not getting me running. So get me running that first mile.
Well, first of all, Carmen, I can totally relate to you. Like, I write about this in the first chapter of my book, how I used to hate to run. And then just through a series of events, through, like, feeling like God spoke to me in this moment when I was going down to a basketball game, kind of planting the seed of desire to run, that's when things really took off and I shifted from hated to run to someone who is, like, their all-consuming passion. So first off, I guess start with that. You know, things can change. And I think running is a tough sport to get into because it's the least amount of fun right when you get into it. I always tell people, like, depending on your fitness level when you start, you got to just kind of hang in there for the first couple of months because it's not going to be a lot of fun. But it's one of those things where the fitter you get, the more fun it is. And, you know, like I talk about being a professional pain manager, but I didn't mention that the first, like, 15 miles of the race just feel amazing. Feels like you're just floating on clouds and gobbling up the ground and you feel effortless. So, you know, there's painful moments, but then there's also most of the race you're feeling really, really great. So you kind of have to take both if you're going to run, like realizing there's some painful moments and then there's going to be this amazing sensation of gliding effortlessly.
So we're talking with Ryan Hall. Run the Mile You're In. Finding God in Every Step is the book. Ryan, you share with us that God really God is really the one who provoked you to do this. Tell us the story about how you got your start.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I was in eighth grade at the time in Southern California, Big Bear Lake, and driving down to this basketball game. I was 5 foot tall and 100 pounds, so you can imagine I wasn't getting a lot of playing time on the court. I just remember looking out over the lake and just feeling like, yeah, God just kind of planted the seed of a desire to try to run around the lake. And I'm so grateful that I did answer that I like cultivated that seed and I let it grow. And I chose to accept the challenge. If I wouldn't accepted that challenge, my life would have looked completely different. And really that was kind of the first moment in my life where I really felt like God was stepping in and like directing me. And it wasn't like a audible voice or vision or anything crazy like that. It was just like this quiet desire that was just planted in me. So my dad and I, we went the next Saturday morning. We laced up our shoes and went for a very, very slow, long, and painful run around the lake. And, you know, I hate it. It wasn't easy. It wasn't pretty. And I fell in love with running at that moment. And I remember collapsing on the couch and feeling like God was telling me he'd give me a gift to the best guys in the world. But he'd given me that gift so I could help people, and I spent the next 20 years trying to live out that vision.
So I appreciate that God's call didn't look like something that was easy or something that you already necessarily knew you could do, but it was a vision and it was a challenge and it was hard the first time, and you didn't quit. It also occurs to me that unlike running around a field where, you know, at any point you could stop and just cut through the middle and return to the starting point, like once you start your way around a lake, you're committed.
That's a great point. You know, I've told this story many times. I've never thought about that, so I love that.
I've heard mountain climbers, like people who have this like passion to, you know, to summit the next mountain. I have heard them describe their passion for what they do in much the same way. And so I do think that this resonates, that God does call us to do things that are challenging, that seem beyond ourselves. And I think that it's easy, Ryan, for people to imagine that is then focused on the self. And so when we come back from the break, I would love for you to talk about how God has used this, not only passion for running, but excellence in running and success in running, and has really then used it to enable you to do for him things that you otherwise may not have ever had a platform or the privilege of doing. So I am talking with Ryan Hall. He is a runner, but he's also the author of Run the Mile You're In, Finding God in Every Step. We'll be right back.
It's the single most misused text in the Bible. This is Jim Garlow. In fact, I'm convinced that judge not are the only two words some people know in the entire Bible. Matthew 7, verses 1 to 2 states, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." It does not merely say, "Judge not." It says, in effect, "Don't judge someone else unless you are willing to be judged by the same standard." Mature Bible-believing followers of Jesus are willing to be judged by the same standard. Of course we are to judge. We judge when we say that a man should not beat his wife. We judge when we say that racial prejudice is sin, or murder, or abuse of children, or a lot of other things. We should be ready to clarify this with Scripture. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at wellverse.world.
Just joining us, I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I am talking with Ryan Hall. He is an Olympic runner. He is a two-time Olympian. He is also the holder of the U.S. record in the half marathon. And so he can speak with a lot of authority on the subject of running. As a person of faith, he can also talk about how we find God in every step. And so Run the Mile You're In is the book. Ryan, again, thank you for joining us today on the program. Let's pick up where we left off. Talk with us about how this calling has then enabled you to really pursue things beyond yourself on God's behalf.
Yeah, you know, when I had that moment when I was 13 and felt like God told me, like, I'm one of the best guys in the world, but I was given that gift so I could help other people. Now it's really easy for me to see how those were linked, because what I found with enduring pain, enduring suffering, I am able to do that the best when I get outside of myself and I'm thinking about other people that I love or think about why am I running this race. So I always encourage people, like, what is it that pulls on your heartstrings that you can get involved in? And if you're going to run a race, might as well run it for, you know, a charity that is fighting the battles that you want to be fighting in areas that you feel passionate about. So my wife and I, after the 2008 Olympics, and I just lived, you know, the first part of my vision of running with the best guys in the world in the Olympic Games. And then right after that, we partnered with Team World Vision, who had a group of 500 runners at the Chicago Marathon who fundraised and raised money through their race efforts for a community of 90,000 people in Zambia to bring clean water to them. And I remember I had the privilege of going to these communities and doing some ribbon cutting ceremonies and things like that. And I remember talking to this villager, and he told me, like, you know, because you guys did this, everyone in my community, their life expectancy is going to go up by 10 years. I thought, how incredible is that? Like, that was the moment when I kind of realized the second part of that vision. It's like, we can become a part of a group, a part of a movement. We can run a race for a reason, do some fundraising. And literally now, like in Zambia, there's 90,000 people that are all living 10 years longer than they otherwise would have. And so that's just like, man, like, this is so powerful. You know, I don't think people totally understand how powerful running can be when we all come together. We all go after something together. My wife and I, we went home and started our own foundation, and we continue to support World Vision and organizations similar to World Vision and work all around the world to help alleviate world poverty.
And that's something that you took home with you. Like, this isn't just like good that you're doing out there. This is really transformed who you are as a family. I would appreciate it if you just tell us about your girls.
Yeah. I love talking about our girls, because 3.5 years ago, my wife and I, we brought home 4 sisters from Ethiopia, and we had no kids before that. So we went from 0 to 4 real quick. And our kids at the time of adoption were like 5, 8, 11, 12, and 15. So, you know, we had quite the spread of kids right away. You know, we're trying to handle teenagers without ever handling the infant. So it was quite a challenge, but one that I'm so glad that we took. And that's what I find over and over again with running in life. It's like I'm always fighting this battle to, like, want to make myself be comfortable. But when I step out and I put myself in positions where I'm desperate for God to show up and I'm needing strength outside myself, those the sweetest moments of life for me. So, you know, this is one of those moments where it's like, I don't know what it's like to be a dad and a parent, kids, but it's one of those moments, again, going back to the title of the book, Run the Mile You're In, is like, okay, just do a good job today with whatever you're doing with your girls now. So it's been fun. They're thriving now and, you know, involved in sports and school and doing great. And our house is so full of energy and laughter and dancing and all the things that you'd expect with a house of four girls. So it's been super fun.
Again, my conversation partner is Ryan Hall. He is a coach. He's a dad. He's a husband. He is a Christian brother. He is also the author of Run the Mile You're In, Finding God in Every Step. You can check out what he and his wife are doing in their foundation at The Steps Foundation, thestepsfoundation.org. You can grab the book, Run the Mile You're In, pretty much anywhere now. So we're excited about that. Ryan, I would appreciate if you just maybe talk a little bit about how running, because I think that for non-runners, there needs to be some incentive here. And so for non-runners, talk about how running has enhanced your discipleship, your life of prayer, your relationship with God. Like, go down one of those, go down one of those avenues with us.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I what I like to tell people is, like, find what you were created to do and then go do that and connect with God while you're doing that. So, like, for example, for myself, hearing from God, for me, like, sitting down and being still and, like, just waiting to hear God's voice and praying and is a really difficult task. Still do it, but it's not when I feel breakthrough and when I feel like I really experience God the most. You know, I do experience them in those moments sometimes, but it's more frequent when I'm out running or what I was kind of created to do. So I tell people, like get out there and do what you love to do, even if it's just a hobby. I think there's something about, like, physically moving that, like, turns your brain on, and if you don't take your cell phone with you, you have no distractions. It just becomes, like, very easy to hear from God in those moments, and that's how it was for me, you know, when I finished that 15-mile run and collapsed on the couch. Like, I was so tired and physically exhausted that it quieted down all the distractions in my mind, all the other thoughts that would have been kind of running through my mind at that time, and allowed me to connect with the Creator. So I think that was one of my favorite parts of my career as a runner, just going out in the forest all by myself, going for a run on a nice little single track trail, and just experiencing God and His creation and connecting with Him that way.
So I want to make one observation, and then you can either receive this as a question or not. It occurs to me that had your dad not responded the way he responded to your sense of, I feel called to run around that lake, if he had not been a person who was willing to be with you in that stage of life for that, for that particular event, this whole story might be very different today. And so I just find myself wondering, you know, like, the role that you see your dad playing in all of this.
Yeah. Oh, my dad was, you're 100% right. Like, none of this would have happened if it wasn't for him. Like, to begin with, I even started running. He would always call out the golden moon. So he'd see me play other sports and running and other sports. And he always told me, you're a great runner if you wanted, but the desire has to come from you. And that's a really hard thing to do. And I know now personally as a parent with watching my Ethiopian daughters run, and I'm like, oh, they need to run. Like, they're going to go to start going to kids practice and stuff, you know. Like, it's very easy to force someone into something when you see their talent. But rather than doing that, my dad patiently waited. He waited till the desire came from God, then the desire came from me. And I'm so glad he did, because, you know, I've ran up against so many heartbreaks, so many losses, so many disappointments along the way, that the first time I encountered one of those obstacles, I would have folded if I was doing it for my dad. But he knew that. He knew it had to come from me, the drive, the determination. And so he was willing to tell it did. And, you know, it was a risk. Like, I could have just never, you know, taken the challenge. But I think it just shows, like, his amount of faith that he has in God, that God can give me the inspiration that I need to get started and develop this gift that he's seen. So I just try and do that with my kids, try and call out the gold in them and try to, you know, give them as much freedom as they need to choose wrong path. And but then when they do, I want to partner with them the same way my dad partnered with me in my first run. He coached me in high school. He was just like kind of my as I was coming up in the sport, and just constantly feeding me encouragement. So it's so important that you have someone in your life like that that's just willing to speak encouragement to you over and over again.
So if you're listening today and you are a runner, we want to celebrate that. If you are a person who might inspire someone else to run, we want to call you to that today. And so thank you so much, Ryan Hall, for being with us here on Mornings with Carmen. The book is Run the Mile You're In. It is available everywhere books are sold. Thank you to Zondervan for you know, publishing it. But you can also check out what Ryan and his wife are doing at thestepsfoundation.org. Ryan, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Carmen.
I got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Okay, I don't know if that inspired you to run. It might have at least inspired me to get my 10,000 steps in today. And encourage you to do the same. I appreciate that Ryan recognizes that we're not all necessarily called to, become the kind of runner that he is, but we are, each and everyone, called to run the mile we're in. So let me encourage you to do that today. Again, the Steps Foundation, if you are interested in checking out what Ryan and his wife are up to in terms of encouraging others. So at the end of this hour, let me just make one more comment about another piece of headline news that you may see today at a Trump rally in the panhandle of Florida. Last night, there was a shout out from the crowd suggesting that people on the border seeking asylum should be shot. Let me just say, no, no, never, never, not just here, but never in your heart as well.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.